Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I think if there's a word that could describe the biggest change that has occurred in the workplace in recent decades, it's collaboration. The move from co-op, from individual initiative, the bold cowboy approach, to it takes a village. Team, cooperation, collaboration, consensus, flattened hierarchy, all of those phrases. And as all trends, sometimes trends are good and they continue inexorably in one direction, and that's great. So, for example, better working conditions of people on breathing carcinogens is clearly the fewer carcinogens within reason we breathe. In other words, at some point it becomes not dangerous and the cost of controlling is so great. But in general, the move toward healthier workplaces certainly can hardly be argued with. But some trends are not really trends, but they're pendulums. The question is the move to ever more collaboration, consensus, flattened hierarchy, teamwork, it takes a village, is that a pendulum that has swung too far, not far enough? Or is it a trend we should simply embrace? I'd like to kick off the discussion. I'm going to be asking you to call in and weigh in on this in a few minutes, but I thought it'd be fun to start with the following. The first part of what I'm going to tell you now, this is a dialogue that I actually heard on my daily, I take a daily hike around the Lafayette Reservoir with my doggie, Einstein. And this is a paraphrase of a conversation I heard. These were two women who were just about the same speed as I am, were maybe 10 to 20 feet ahead of me, and I stayed behind them and listened. I'm going to give them two short names. I'll just change voices so you can know that they're different voices. It doesn't start with career stuff, but it ends there. I lost 30 pounds on cardio. You want to sign up with me for the program? It's only $1,490, and they give you lots of support. Yeah, sure. Sounds like fun. I don't know about fun, but I lost 30 pounds. I'd like to lose weight, too. Maybe we should ask Madison if she wants to do it with us. Yeah, sure. I can't wait to go to the concert. Me, too. The hotel we'll be staying in is so cute. Yeah, I'll bring a gallon of Kettle One. And I'll bring $40 for drinks at the concert and $100 for gambling. That sounds about right. Totally fun. Hey, you want to take a day off to go to the Giants game? Sure. From here, it's fictionalized, and make it more work-related. I'm going to start by telling the story of Jen, one of the two of them. As a child, Jen was always one of the in kids. She made sure she was. She wore the right clothes, talked about the right pop culture, used the right argo, you know, the vernacular. For example, she was all like, "Are you mad at me?" I was like, "No way." Well, much of Jen's time was spent in groups, at recess, sleepovers, shopping at the mall. She chose her college, mainly because most of her friends were going there. She joined a sorority and welcomed the shared rituals and built-in group with whom she had a common bond. After college, and here's where we get to the work part, she applied for jobs for which the recruitment ad stressed collaboration and teamwork. She loved phrases like, "There is no I in team." And she was grateful when, occasionally, someone would pick up the slack for her. And it didn't bother her much that all that team decision-making meant that it took a long time to get things done, and that those consensus-based solutions usually were tepid, that which everyone could agree. Unconsciously, Jen wanted to keep to the schedule, date a lot until she's like 28, and then find a husband, then work till she's had a baby, then stay home or maybe work part-time, just like most of her friends. And thus went most of Jen's collaborative life, including a bevy of friends helping her through her breast cancer treatments, and at her deathbed. There, her room was filled with flowers, cards, and people always visiting. Near the end, they all decided to throw her a final, quote, party. 20 of her BFFs, best friends forever, were in the room, holding her hand, hugging her, telling stories about all the fun they had had. And Jen told the most stories. And then, one of the visitors innocently asked Jen, "You have been so much a part of us. Who are you yourself?" Jen, who was normally talkative, felt silent, thinking and thinking. After 20 seconds, someone could no longer stand the silence and said, "Well, I remember the time when Jen, Taylor, Chrissy, and you and I went..." And when they left, Jen thought, "I benefited a lot from always being part of the group. But did the benefits to me and to others outweigh the liabilities?" So my first question to you, my dear listeners here at KELW, are you primarily a collaborator? Has any loss of individuality been worth it? Is this something you'd like to do to be more individualistic or to be more group-oriented? The whole issues around collaboration in the workplace, and now I want to directly focus exclusively on the workplace because that's what the show's mandate is. There are two components in the workplace where the collaboration and flattened hierarchy has become, forgive the fancy word, hegemonic, dominant. There is the consensus thing, that decisions, important decisions, whether it be hiring or strategic direction or whatever, are better done by consensus as opposed to individuals. And there are pros and cons. The advantages is, of course, sometimes crowdsourcing is a great idea. Crowdsourcing gets multiple input. Multiple people, they also feel buy-in. And you therefore perhaps you have greater brain power entering into the decision. On the other hand, when we require group decision-making or consensus, there often is at some point, because it's so difficult around the really important and difficult decisions to come to consensus, that everybody ends up compromising and only agreeing on the lowest common denominator idea, something tepid that just everybody could agree with. So it's less likely that bold solutions will accrue. The other key subcomponent of the collaborative, less hierarchical workplace is the notion of group pay. In many workplaces today, individual pay has been replaced by what I call hybrid pay, where your bonus, your salary, or whatever, are partly a result of your efforts, but also partly the group's. And the advantage of that is because, again, it encourages teamwork, collaboration. The downside is it rewards slackers, because those who do the least in the group are going to get the beneficiary of the harder workers in the group. And those who are the harder workers, or smarter workers, more capable workers, are going to see their pay decline, because their pay is in part a function of the lowest functioning persons in the group. So the issue of collaboration versus more individual initiative is a complicated and central one in the workplace. And I'm curious, I tried to do the best I could to present both sides, but I think this is something that I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts, especially here in the Bay Area, where the idea of flattened hierarchy, collaboration, it takes a village, consensus, teamwork, is, you know, if anything, this is the epicenter here in the Bay Area of such thinking. Therefore, you're more likely to have experienced it. So I invite you to call to share not your values about it particularly, because that's just shooting from the hip, but if you've had experience in the collaborative or maybe very individualistic workplace and want to speak about your experience, for better and worse, in the more collaborative or more individualistic workplace, I would love to hear what you have to say, and maybe our listeners will as well. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. We're soliciting your questions, or I am soliciting your questions, your comments about your experiences in a more collaborative or more individualistic workplace, and whether you think this indeed is a trend that should accelerate, that is, greater collaboration, teamwork, as opposed to individual initiative, or is the pendulum swung too far? Your experience, your opinions, 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for your calls, I'm going to share some just plain old tips. I've been I have this kind of hierarchy of these categories that I use to try to describe, that I categorize all the topics here on Work with Marty Nemko. I have those about new careers, choosing different careers, try to talk about under-the-radar careers. Then I talk about how to land a job. Then I talk about the macro societal issues facing society, like this one about the collaboration versus cooperation thing. And so the one I've been particularly remiss about lately has been the job seeker strategies, the tips for landing a job. And I want to say one that is, it strikes me as such darn common sense, and yet many people don't do it for fear of embarrassment, and that is this. Unless you are absolutely terrified that your boss will find that you're currently employed and you're terrified your boss is going to find that you're looking for another job, I urge you to not be embarrassed to tweet out and Facebook you're looking for a job to everybody in your network, all the connected people. People feel embarrassed because they think it makes them sound like a loser, especially if they're not 20 anymore. But here's the secret. You're not saying, I'm desperate, I want any job. You're tweeting out or Facebooking, I'm looking for my best job yet. And here are what those characteristics of that job would be. That's not only a source of embarrassment, but it would make people admire you, that you're trying to get something better. And you've defined, not too narrowly. You're not saying, most people are not that narrowly defined. You know, I want to have a job as a wallpaperer, or I want to have a job as a big data analyst using only SaaS. Most people are more variable. They say, I have a lot of experience, and I'm going to try to use kind of a KLW as an example. I have a lot of experience in fundraising and nonprofits, especially in understanding the databases like Razor's Edge, and I'm looking for a job that will integrate my knowledge of Razor's Edge and fundraising along with my ability to close fat cats, and I wouldn't use the word fat cats, not polite, wealthy individuals and organizations to create planned giving programs. That's somewhere in the middle. And that is nothing to be embarrassed about. And you are now invoking the major source of where you're going to find leads. Because good jobs, full-time permanent jobs, are going away. Unless you're a star or unless you're well-connected, they are going away, replaced by part-time, temp, project work. And so the really good benefited jobs when they're fewer and far between, they go to people who know people. Not just because network is important, but because the employer can trust that a referral from Mary Johnson is going to be a more valid indicator of whether that person is good. If Mary Johnson is an employee at this company or nonprofit, they're going to trust that Mary Johnson's recommendation is going to be more valid than someone self-reporting in their resume, cover letter, etc. So please, do not be shy, unless you're really terrified of losing your job. And if you're that terrified, maybe you shouldn't be looking for another job. But unless you're really, really terrified that your boss will find out, then tweet out and Facebook out your request. And LinkedIn, of course. And LinkedIn, post on LinkedIn that you are looking to your connections. That may be the same. And it's easy. This you can do in 5 minutes. This is no big project. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko. That was just to fill a little time. We're talking about the pros and cons of the ever more collaborative as opposed to individual, initiative, hierarchical, competitive workplace. I'm interested in your comments about your experiences in your workplace, especially if it's been a quite collaborative, cooperation-centric one, or a very much individual initiative one. And tell me what you're seeing. What's working, what's not working. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, KALW, 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
I developed a performance appraisal consensus measurement tool for a company that brought 23 pharmaceutical products to market in the 30 years I was there. And we really believed we had got great information about who was doing a better job. We spun that out as a separate company and tried to sell this highly reliable performance assessment. And we discovered, although that company finally, succeeded and did well, that the management really didn't wasn't interested in a reliable measure of who was doing a better job. And it was just an amazing finding. And it's one of those things about, you know, how do you communicate who's doing a better job? It's the balance, you know, it's a great theme. The balance between individual initiative and performance and how the reward system responds to that versus collaboration. I mean, it's just one of the toughest problems around. And it was very amazing to find that although we could pretty much promise you that by getting six or seven inputs from coworkers chosen by each individual person, that you could get a great read on who is doing their job better, they just didn't care. They wanted more touchy-feely stuff. They wanted to be able to keep individual discretion of the supervisor and not have this measurement. It was pretty amazing finding. I thought you might be interested.
You were ascribing their resistance to wanting to retain control over who gets hired or whatever. Normally, my PhD is actually in evaluation and methodology.
Of course, the
criticality behind any instrument is its predictive validity. And normally, right. You need very large sample sizes that are representative of the population to which you're trying to generalize. You're blaming it on their rigidity, but how really good was your validity data in terms of predicting performance?
We got the chairman of the Stanford Statistics Department to say it was the best thing he'd ever seen. Brad Efron, who's
That's
a
good.
MacArthur Fellow.
That, wow.
I was giving you an inference, and I kind of almost didn't care why they weren't doing it. I was just amazed that when we had an instrument, Marty, if you were a supervisor, you would get a sheet with all your troops, and you'd have a two-digit reliability number that Brad Efron designed, and we would have a little, warning. If this number is below 60, don't base important decisions on this feedback.
You know what? So, I'm going to interrupt you just for,
Yeah.
Celebrity endorsement. I mean, I know a lot of really smart people, and it certainly is a valid data point that a statistician from Stanford embraces, says is the best. But that's still testimonial. I learned this in junior high school. The testimonial is the weakest form of argument because...
He didn't endorse it. He designed it.
Okay. And it's still... But in the end, that's still using the brand name of a person. What would sell me is if I have really good data that says... That when you say this person better score this or else, I need to have really good data that says that indeed in my context, in my workplace,
right? Yeah,
that it's going to be predictively valid in terms of how well this person will perform in the future.
Yeah, this was performance appraisal. The idea was five or six people that you choose that work with you.
Yeah.
Compare your performance to others.
Yeah.
And so it's comparison based. We did a bootstrap analysis and grew the data set 5,000 times and resampled it.
Sounds great. You know what? I'm going to interrupt you really because we're not getting into the weeds too much. But yes, very interesting. I wanted to get just enough in the weeds so that I understood it. Thanks very much for that perspective. I appreciate it a lot.
Sure. Bye.
Phone number, if you've had an experience with collaboration versus cooperation in your workplace, want to talk about it for good, bad, the core question is, do you think that the move toward ever flatter hierarchies, more collaboration, less individual initiative, more consensus, is a good trend or a bad trend? Has the pendulum swung too far or not far enough? Phone number, here work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. And as usual, I want to now make sure that you have an opportunity. This is a nice little intellectual public radio discussion. But down in the trenches, if you are worrying whether you can afford your medication or your cat food, you know, you don't care about this crap. You want to get a job, or you want to succeed in your job, or you're afraid of losing your job. So if you have a work-related problem that is more down and dirty, I certainly welcome your call, and I will do my best to help you. I call those workovers, but no pummeling is involved, and the price is certainly right. Even if you're unemployed and homeless, you can afford this. It's zero. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I use a combination of ingredients. We focus primarily on the mission, what we want to achieve, and then we have some individual efforts within that mission, as well as an overall thing. And we would meet once a month to review each other's individual thrust.
You know what? I have to interrupt you. The phone quality is so bad. It is so crackly. Can you call back on a different line?
Yes, I can.
Oh,
I'll be happy to.
Well, now you sound fine. Keep talking.
Okay.
Oh, so you're good now.
This was in an academic environment.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of a difference. But the important thing is in many cases, individuals were allowed to select a project that was reviewed by me as their director that would contribute to the mission. So I would have a way of judging how they would be doing it, as well as the overall group things where we did collaborate and we did get not so much consensus, I would say, but enough information that we could direct. And as it approached, or before we did performance evaluations, one of the things we did is I sat down with everybody and said, look, your performance evaluation is my performance evaluation. Here's what we intend to do. We'll set it out. We'll establish various goals, and if there were any metrics that we would review every 3 months or and make adjustments as needed. So at the end, there was no surprise. And my management liked this approach to a certain extent. They would occasionally dump things on me that were not necessarily part of the initial mission, and we had to readjust our time and different priorities. But when that happened, and people were allowed to float their individual projects as long as the important overarching issues were addressed. So, you know, it's a long way of saying it's both collaboration and independence, giving someone a chance to excel in their area of specialization, while also giving them the feeling of collaborating to the team and also using joint projects.
Yeah, it does. In the end, probably, as in most things, you know, the golden, the Aristotelian golden mean probably ends up being the wisest. You know, that is a reasonable balance. You know, getting to choose your own project is really important. But again, won't that vary in the individual? There are some people who are very strategic and they love choosing their own project. And there are others who do much better when they get a set of directions. So again, is one size fits all the answer? Or if I am a manager, and I hadn't thought about this till this moment, but if I am a manager, I don't have a unified policy. I think, let's say I have five people reporting to me. I think about each of those individuals and say, how can I make the most of this man or woman? And I say, is this person who wants to choose his own project, her project? Does this person want direction? Is this person going to respond? Is this person somebody who will get dispirited by having to live with the team? Some of it is also going to depend on the team. If my team has got, let's say, four people who are really slugs and one who's a hot performer, I'm not going to saddle that hot performer with the slugs. And let's say I can't get rid of the slugs. So I'm, you know, are my slugs going to be lazier or less capable, do a less good job if we do have more collaboration? Or do I need to just silo them into what the individual thing they do best? So I guess the answer is, for me, and I'm curious what you think, is don't make an individual decision about collaboration, competition. Screw the societal norm. Screw the zeitgeist. Let's look at the individual people involved here and let's make the most of them. What do you think?
Right, I agree. And it depends on the initial hire. If you focus, again, on the mission of what it is you're set out to accomplish and look at all the individual projects within that mission, yeah, you're going to have, I wouldn't call them slugs. I would call them people that maybe need direction. And that's where directors get paid the big bucks to act as a coach to make sure. And, you know, if they're not performing and if the initial hire was not as you thought, well, the option is to transition them out.
Well, you raised the most important point here, which is, as every darn book that has ever been written on leadership talks about, the most important thing you ever, ever do as a manager or leader is you take the time to hire slowly and you fire fast. Because much as we believe in theory about the malleability of people in coaching or whatever, there is endless empirical evidence that it is very difficult, even for shrinks who have patients on the couch for 10 years, to change people fundamentally. And so you're not going to take somebody who's kind of a slow performer or not working very hard or who's got challenges in his or her life to suddenly become an adequate performer. So the key is to take the time and use those referrals to hire the best people you can for a reasonable amount of money. And then if you've made a mistake, cut your losses. Do you buy that?
I completely agree. I mean, you have to start somewhere, and you start with your best sense and judgment when you hire people.
Absolutely.
And you just take it from there. But again, depending on what kind of team you're managing, you can either implement individual things as well as a collaborative issue. One example is that we had monthly webinars. In this particular case, it had to do with health, safety, emergency planning, compliance. And individual team members presented their individual work to a point, but we also had a team effort to reduce overall noncompliance. And we solicited input from the audience. How can we do our job better for you since we were service?
Yep, that certainly can be. That's where the crowdsourcing really helps. Anyway, thanks very much for your call. Let's get more perspectives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I work in education.
Uh-huh.
And I've worked in a variety of schools over the years, and now I own my own company doing like educational services. And the collaborative ideal, they would call it the team concept, has been increasingly pervasive. And I don't know, from my observation, it results in a lot of tedium. A lot of staff meetings that go on.
Yep, I've heard that again and again from my clients. Give me one example. Give me one vivid example, and then because your phone connection is crappy, you're on a cell phone, I want to let you go. But give me one.
Maybe this is a little better. Yeah. So one example would be, what is the format for the testing going to be upcoming? Should we have the kids, stay in the classroom when they're done and do this activity? Should we have them go out? I think this. I think that. I find that the students don't like this. I find that the students don't like that. And everybody has something to say.
And feels they have the right to say it. And when we look at the net effect, individually one meeting is nothing, but collectively, this is a great point you raise. I worry terribly that if there were two parallel universes or two parallel nonprofits or government agencies or companies, and one really did empowered the individuals to feel they have a right to, just what you're saying, to say their piece about everything, very little would get done. I do remember consulting for a major Fortune 500 company that was absolutely obsessed with team. Nothing ever got done. And in the end, the stock price has gone down. It used to be 80. It's now 10. Those are abstract numbers. But the shareholders, the teachers, the social workers, the people who invested their savings in there are losing money in what is a very popular consumer products company. And in fact, then the products end up being worse. And all this time, they were just... I'll just say focusing on colors so much and collaboration on colors and which design is exactly going to be right. Should the collar be a little narrower, a little thinner, a little wide? And it was endless. And it feels like they were just having these lovely conversations. They enjoyed the conversations. They enjoyed the process. But I feel like we're sacrificing results for process and making people feel good about being empowered. Do you think that's too strong?
No, I do not think it's too strong. And, like it or not, I think that the managers are there for a reason, because they, even though obviously this doesn't always bear out, they have, an expertise in management, or they worked to a certain level where they've been promoted for a reason, and this is their opportunity to create efficiency.
Yeah, but today there's huge risk. If a manager is too individual, you know, this is what we're going to do, and here's why, and that's it. Here's what we're going to do, and here's why. Then the workers are going to feel that the boss is hierarchical, not listening, not hearing people, and he or she is at risk. In the old days, that was seen as crisp leadership, bold. Now that would be seen as not empowering workers, not taking right. other people into consideration. So that's what I'm talking about, is my fears that
I don't think the manager should be an autonomous dictator by any means. And I get what you're saying about the perception of that is very, very pervasive. I think everyone is also theoretically their own expert in their own sphere, you know. So if you're talking about a big company or whatever, and you know, you're the graphic designer, you're the accountant, you're the secretary, whatever, the manager creates the vision for the unit, and then it is up to the individual to produce their best individual work within that vision.
That's, you know, that is another of these dominant thoughts. There isn't this thing called brain power. We tend to say people have skills. You're skilled as an accountant. You're skilled in graphic design. In reality, the true academic scientists that I really spend a lot of time talking with these folks, there is this thing called brain power, the ability to reason well, abstract well, remember well, etc. And, of course, there are some managers who get hired because of, you know, they're just non-merit-based factors. But in general, a good manager is better at putting all these things together and making wise judgments than the average worker bee, let alone the below-average worker bee, who nonetheless feels the need that he or she has an equal right to have his or her say in all input. And that is, I think, that's another megatrend, the devaluing of this thing called brain power, not true in Silicon Valley. Again, you know, when I talked with about Google's head of human resources, he says in the end, the most important thing is brain power. It's not your degree, because you can get degrees without as much brain power. It's not your individual skill set. It is your brain power, and that is another of the megatrends. We're not allowed to say that anymore, and yet it is core to accomplishment and ultimately to curing disease, better leaders. Look at Donald Trump. I don't mean to be political, but Donald Trump is an idiot, or he's pre-senile. He has no business being president of the United States, but nobody's willing to call him dumb. The reality is he's dumb or pre-senile. It's not that he's misguided. He is unintelligent. He goes from point to point with no backup, no nothing. He can't hold a point. And it's not like I'm some wild leftist. I'm just picking because I know it's a sympathetic view, you know, about Trump. But we need to use the word intelligence in defining what is maybe the most important characteristic in our leaders, for-profit, non-profit, and government. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. You know, when I was a kid, I used to think that everybody who was older was competent and intelligent. And the more that I've, you know, experience, not just in my field, but, you know, observing certainly politics, you realize that a strong team of, as you say, you know, intelligent, or at least people who have the freedom to explore their own, I think, intelligence within a solid framework can accomplish, you know, great things.
Yep, and in addition to the intelligence, be having the right temperament. And again, I am not a huge Hillary fan, but I need to praise her here. She has the right temperament. She is calm. In the face of whatever attacks she gets, she does not go wild. She is thoughtful. You listen to her answers, they're reflective. That's very, so it's not just intelligence, it's temperament. And that, you know, we're not allowed to, if we can't, if somebody is volatile, if somebody is high maintenance, those words are not even, you know, those things, to me, it's all about intelligence, drive, and being relatively calm and reflective so that you are able to use your intelligence. If we simply focused on that in everything we do, in who we hire, who we promote, who we choose to give special jobs on to our team, who we elect as our officials, our government officials, the world would be a lot better than this silly game, and frankly, that the media plays, which is gotcha. Because somebody misspoke one time doesn't mean anything. It's garbage. If Donald Trump at one time made some absurd statement, we all do. We all misspeak. But to make that the dominant thing, gotcha. You know, whether you report your tax returns is not the most important thing in terms of who's qualified to be president. What's qualified, what counts is who can truly inspire the public and legislators, who can be influential with legislators, and that's a matter of intelligence, drive, and calm personality. I would get fired. I couldn't get elected dog catcher because I do not have a calm personality. That's why I'm on the radio. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for the call.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Right. I want to change topics now to focus specifically on you. I really do like to balance looking at the big picture issues facing society and the workplace, but I care profoundly, really, about each of you. You're all human beings. You're not a case. You're not a statistic. You know, when I hear about all the unemployment, the government statistics are BS about the unemployment rate, 4.9%. The number of people who are underemployed, doing work that they could have done without a college degree, even though they have a college degree. The number of people working part-time, temp, crappy jobs that are maybe ethically dubious is huge. The number of people who are not counted, who have opted out of the workplace and are doing nothing or working on little crappy jobs. We have the highest percentage of people on food stamps in history, 49%. We have the lowest labor participation rate among people 18 to 65 since 1978. I care about you. I also care about, again, I'm talking about now, those are the people who are really struggling, but I also, because frankly, most of my clients are very successful people, and you know what? There's still many of them are unhappy. I have a client who's a billionaire with a B. And you know what? Next to his bed, he has a bottle of 45 Nembutals. It's an animal tranquilizer because he's tempted to commit suicide. And so, whether you're rich or poor, some people are very, like my wife is just blessed with, you know, genetically she's happy and smart and she's got the greatest career in the world and plans to do it another 20 years, whatever. She's fat, she loves it. But so many people, successful and unsuccessful, are unhappy regarding their work life. And their work life is so critical. And in an era where ever more of those full-time benefited jobs are getting replaced with part-time temp jobs, it is harder and harder to get and keep a good job. Because there's a sort of Damocles that's hanging over your head. Are you going to be always going to be offshore, or is it going to be automated, or part-time, or temp? And everybody seems more sensitive these days. You say one wrong thing, and all of a sudden, I have a client who's a lawyer. Very smart woman. Hard-working woman. But she has a temper. And she raised her voice to an admin because she had to get something printed by 5 o'clock. And it was 4:58, and this admin was putting these low-priority things in the printer. So she yelled at her, and you know what? My client, the lawyer, got written up for yelling at the admin. The admin wrote a long, scathing letter. So people are ever more having to walk on eggshells, whether you're successful or not. So that's by way of saying, I am here for you right now. I do this for free for you because I care about you. It's the meaning of my life. So if you or someone you care about is struggling, whether you're homeless or you are a CEO, whether it's nonprofit, for-profit, government, I can usually help. All you need to do is pick up the phone. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, which provides this service for you for free. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Okay. So I was kind of interspersing our conversation about collaboration versus cooperation, collaboration versus individual initiative in the workplace with practical how-to tips on landing a job. So I talked earlier about the importance of there's no embarrassment in tweeting out or Facebooking or LinkedIn to your connections all of your that you're looking for a better job and laying out what it is. Also, staying on the social media side for the moment, it is not a bad idea to on Twitter, and some people still dismiss Twitter. Oh, it's only 140 characters. How substantive can you be? Really substantive people can be substantive people can be really substantive on Twitter. I invite you to follow me on Twitter. I've tweeted about 3,500 tweets, and it's like my most concise, best points that I can make, and I try to distill them because I have enough respect for my readers that not everybody's got time to read an article. So I encourage you to follow your dream employers and daily post a tweet or three, one, that could make the employer think, now that's a person I might want to hire. After a while, especially if the employer retweeted one or more of your tweets, you might direct message them, asking if your tweets were intriguing enough that they might be willing to talk with you about possible employment. One more, and I'll go back to the phones. On LinkedIn and Facebook groups, there are groups, you really should join at least one, both for your own learning, because that's the most current knowledge. People are sharing. I was just on an artificial intelligence one yesterday. And the latest, most current, Google has a group specifically for artificial intelligence. I'm preparing for a show I'll be doing on the show about artificial intelligence soon. But in any case, you know, that's where you get a chance to show your stuff by first learning and listening what the leading people in artificial intelligence are having to say, because it's done in real time. It's today's thing, today's thoughts. And then when you feel it's appropriate, making a comment or two or asking a question, that's showing your stuff. That's not saying you're great. It's showing it, and that's a great way to try to get somebody to hire you. Make sense? But it takes time. It's not going to happen the first comment or question you raise. Decide that you're going to make part of your professional life to become actively involved in one or more on-target LinkedIn groups, Yahoo groups, Facebook groups, and lurk for a while. That is, follow, read what people are saying so you get a sense of the culture of that group, what's appropriate to ask and say, and not, what's the level of the group. And then when you really feel you have something to contribute or to ask, then do so. And then after a while, you've laid now a proper foundation, and it may even be appropriate at that point to say, I'm looking for a position doing X, Y, and Z, and they won't feel you're just trolling on that group just to pitch, because you've made your contributions. That's a more under-the-radar way to use social media to land a job. And now, if you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, either you're unemployed or well-employed, looking for a job or trying to be happier on your current job, self-employment ideas, I love to hear your self-employment ideas. I like to think I'm kind of, you ever see that show Shark Tank? I like to think I can be perhaps a little less, well, I don't know, I can't say I'm better than them at all. I just think it's a different perspective. If you would like me to give you my honest take and ask you questions about your self-employment idea, or if you are self-employed and it's not doing as well as you'd like, and you'd like me to ask some questions and hopefully maybe offer some suggestions that will help you improve your business or scrap the idea, phone number here, Work With Marty Nemco, KLW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I talked about my tweets. So, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to share some of my tweets that I think are of particular value. Remember, these are 140 characters. Here's one. Being judgmental is unduly criticized. Discernment, rather than presuming equal merit, is fading as a societal value to all our detriment. Being judgmental, not based on race, gender, sexual orientation, but being judgmental about the merits, broadly speaking, of an argument, is an underrated thing. Judgmental is not an intrinsic bad. One more, and then I'll go to the phones. 78% of jobs created this month were minimum wage. That's what I was talking about, the fact how misleading the unemployment rate is. So if jobs are created, 78% were minimum wage. And many of these used to be 70,000 full-time jobs replaced by part-time, and the average pay is down. This is still my tweet. Why does the media only cite the unemployment rate? Misleading. One more. I call this tweet student debt apocalypse. Median wages are up 1.6% over the last 25 years, while median student debt is up 163.8%. I'll stop there. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm calling on behalf of my business partner. We have a communications company, and we've been working in Silicon Valley for the last 32 years.
Okay.
And she, in the course of her work, has developed a very innovative way of teaching technical and business writing to technical people or just people in business, scientists, what have you.
Okay.
And if she wants to, she wants to really do something online, take it online. I mean, we're, you know, at retirement age. She wants to put it online through, she's thinking about maybe Yahoo, I mean YouTube. I mean, if what would you suggest?
Here's where my thoughts are. No, I got it. That is the kind of, teaching somebody to write is an art. I know she wants to monetize it. She wants to make money while she sleeps. I got it. What the smarter approach for something like that would be to train a young person to do it. So she's making some money off of the other person who is a young person who's excellent at it, and that way she doesn't have to be being the worker bee. But the YouTube video or whatever is only a marketing tool. It's fine to create a YouTube video, but that isn't going to get you, that isn't going to, there, some online writing training program is not going to work well. And remember, you're competing with the thousands of writing courses that are taught at prestigious universities that are available online through Coursera or edX, or Udemy or Udacity. Not good. I think what she's got to do is she's got to find somebody who is younger, make really, let that person be an intern. That's a perfect internship, where that person is not licking envelopes, but they find a really high-quality person, but who's young, inexperienced, maybe who is, say, a technical writer, graduate of technical writing certificate program at Stanford or whatever, and say, how would you like an internship? I will let you sit at my elbow during my next 20 individual and group trainings, so you can learn a lot and mentor you, and then, if you're good, we'll start to sell you to potential clients, and that way this older person can make some money and the younger person is in heaven because he or she has got this new job. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you very much, Marty.
You're welcome. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello? Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Marty. How are you doing?
Good. Is your radio down? Because I'm hearing a little bit of an echo.
Yeah, I'll turn it down a bit more because it is on. So I had a question regarding job titles and networking as well.
Okay.
A couple of weeks ago, you gave the example of, you know, calling up people and say, you're a Unix programmer. But in my background is varied. I have a degree in international business and marketing, and I started off as an executive in international trade in the medical industry, and then I moved on into web design and web applications.
Wow, that's a very big.
Manager.
That's a very
so
different.
How do you choose a job title? You know, it's not. It could like you know. It could differ. It's like you know, if you're a programmer, you would say you're a programmer. But if you've done like marketing or international business, choosing the job title is the first question, and to position yourself. And hello.
Yeah, well, I'm.
Yeah.
You made a rather enormous change when you. Are you hearing me?
Yeah, I could hear you. The second question, I'll just go ahead with the second question briefly, is that in terms of networking, you know, they say to, go on to have your LinkedIn profile and contact people that you know. But what happens if, you know, it's a very slow process, right? So you want to, quickly reach out to the decision maker. Would it be better in that case just to, you know, go for decision directly and not rely on people to introduce you? You know, you might go to an event where you don't really meet the decision maker, right?
Yeah. I'm going to interrupt you. Your phone connection is terrible, so I'm going to answer your question off there. You can keep listening. Now turn your phone back, your radio on, and I will answer your questions. First of all, you've made the bigger issue here is not title. You made a radical career change from being an executive in marketing to being a graphic designer and web developer. You need to have a really good explanation for why you did that, because that is going to be viewed as a big step down. So you need to have an excellent explanation for why you did that. Second, the title should be not something broad like graphic designer, but it's got to be some, because that makes you generic. It's got to be something very specific. If you are a rock star, and if you're looking, I'm assuming you're looking again for another graphic designer kind of job, a web developer, you really want to talk about specifically what you do best. Maybe it's a certain vertical, because you said you were working in the medical, in the pharmaceutical industry. Maybe you want to say you are an expert at creating websites for new drugs using perhaps, and so saying that, expert web designer specializing in pharmaceutical industry is a good title. With regard to the question of whether you should use your network, and there's two, rather than go directly to employers, there's a dual answer. The first thing is, for some people, using your network takes a long time. For some people, it happens instantly. Whether it happens instantly or not depends on two things. Yes, the number of people you contact, because the odds of any one people, person in your network having a good lead for you is very small. But two is the quality of your pitch. If, in fact, you sound great and like a real winner and adding value in an area that's really a hot and needed, you could, in one inquiry, one quick email, as I said, tweet out or Facebook out or LinkedIn out to your connections, you could get a lead immediately. If you're kind of generic and really not that skilled, you know, and your network is very small, you may not get anything. So you can't say it's good or bad or that it's necessarily slow or fast to use your network. It depends. But you're also not wrong, you are right, that you should be going to directly to potential employers. Now, generally, you're wasting your time going to brand name employers like the Googles or the Amazons or the Apples of the world, because they get so many unsolicited applications that just go into the black hole. They do almost all of their hiring based on referrals from somebody. So don't waste your time with those. If you don't have connection to those companies, forget it. Go to a small niche, your secondary. If you have a pharmaceutical background and you're interested, for example, in doing graphic design in the pharma industry, go to the second and third tier players, because everybody's going to want to work for Amgen and work for Merck and work for the former Genentech, now Roche. But not everybody's going to want to work for Burlex, which is a much less known pharmaceutical company, but they still are a multi-million dollar company, or even $100 million company, and they may need somebody. That's where you go under the radar. You go to the hiring manager at that point, and you lay out what the best skills you have are in this case, especially a portfolio, because it's easy for you to say you're great at graphic design in the pharmaceutical industry. But if you can show a portfolio of great work, or even if you haven't got one already, create a mock-up. Create a set of screenshots that would be an ideal kind of what a really good website for, say, a new drug might be. And that is going to speak volumes to that second or third tier company. Anyway, I hope that helps. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello.
Hi. I have a question about a really growing field that's kind of niche, telepsychology. What are your
It's huge. It's growing. Telepsychology is doing, I use it myself all the time. It's working with clients by phone or Skype. I'm a huge fan. There are people.
How do you get into it?
You get into it by being an excellent psychologist. And then you market, instead of limiting yourself to just in person, you say, for people who are remote or who don't want to face the ever worsening Bay Area traffic, we work all the time by Skype and phone. This is not a separate field. It's like, it's just a different delivery vehicle. You simply add it to your menu of services. When I started as a career counselor 29 years ago, almost all of my clients were in person. Now, I would say only a third of my clients are in person. The other two-thirds are phone or Skype. Absolutely. Now, I even have some clients where after we've worked together a while, they don't need to pay the money for me at a session. I simply say, email me when you have a problem. And if it's something quick and short, I'll do it for free. And if I have to spend at least a quarter of an hour, I'll only charge you for the fraction of the hour. It really is not a change in what you're doing. It's a change in delivery systems. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I'm an early career psychologist just wrapping up my postdoc.
Uh-huh.
So how do I get started in this?
That's a separate question about whether you want to be self-employed or work for an entity. I am a huge believer. Most people who are psychologists are not particularly entrepreneurial. And I believe that the leading provider of psychological services is going to be Kaiser Permanente for two reasons. Number one, the healthcare laws have been written already to favor Kaiser Permanente. And I really profoundly believe that when Hillary gets elected, and she will, that single payer is going to be on the road. They've been going in little bits and pieces, but there will be a single payer. And Kaiser will be one of the beneficiaries that made it one of the core providers. They provide, you know, there's a law about 3 years ago or 5 years ago, I don't remember now, that said that all mental health services must be provided at equal level as physical health. So Kaiser has got to provide a rich panoply of mental health services. So if I weren't particularly entrepreneurial, I would be in trying to get a job at Kaiser in clinical. And yes, I imagine because they like the idea of doing phone and Skype or whatever because it's more efficient and less space consuming than in person. What about what? But I don't know you. So what
well,
about
where I'm at right now? And I have some entrepreneurial success. I am disinclined to work for Kaiser
okay.
because I'm coming out of a clinical environment that was not the best experience. I learned a lot from it. I learned a lot about myself, and I learned that I really do not.
Okay.
Want to work for Kaiser.
Do you want to be self-employed? Is that the goal?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, if you want to be self-employed, the key is nichecraft. You cannot ethically be a generic psychologist because the field is still in its early adolescence. It is a largely BS field. And therefore, the antidote to that in the year 2016 and probably for the next 10 to 20 years until we really understand it, much of mental illness is physiologically based and there'll be better cures than than stupid Prozac and the rest of it, is to be an expert in some niche, whether it be eating disorders or autism or something very specific, so that at least you are the expert at least some narrow area of knowledge and not just what you learned academically in your postdoc, but... Well, you really, it is an art, and you only develop expertise in the art through lots of experience. So if you decide you're going to stay, let's say for whatever reason you like menopausal women as the issue, or early divorce women, or grief counseling, or whatever, focusing on them so that all your clinical experience is with them, you develop this nuanced sense of what really is the right thing to do and say in a given situation. When I say that that's the key, not whether you're doing phone or Skype or whatever, the key is developing a niche and developing as much practice as you can, working in that niche, and then, yes, offering the various delivery systems for providing the counseling. Does that make sense?
Yes.
What's your niche? What should it be?
My specialization is mind-body skills for anxiety management.
Okay. And... I like the idea. Anxiety, of course, is the most common source of referral to therapists. And mind-body stuff is going to appeal very well in the Bay Area. That's core to the Bay Area values. I want to see if I can push you a little more narrowly in the little time we have left. If there was a goddess and the goddess knew you and your strengths and your limitations, would you be better off working with children, adults, men, women, people of color? What category of people who have anxiety, particular specific phobias? What would be the specific niche within that would make you a rock star?
At-risk youth.
At-risk youth. Therefore, you're not going to be self-employed. Forget it, because they don't have money. At-risk youth, you're only going to, if I'm nervous about it because at-risk youth are not particularly open to mind-body stuff. This is core, that's a very kind of middle-class Bay Area-ish thing. And I worry about that. That, I would say, should be your volunteer work. If you're trying, if you don't need to make a living, you're independently wealthy, that's fine. But if you...
Okay, then let's go with executive type.
Oh, executive types. Well, they've got to be nonprofit executives or very liberal kind of executives. Silicon Valley is not going to go with the mind-body stuff. So you might want to focus in people who are in leadership in nonprofits here in the Bay Area and make that your focus on dealing with the anxieties, perhaps in the anxieties of being overwhelmed and being an executive as well as others. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Right on.
And I want to thank, as usual, my board operator, Joanne Marr. I love it. She really, I wish you could see her. She's so, she doesn't want me to say it. I just think she does a good job. She really pays attention. It's great. I want to thank, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers. And my wife, Barbara Nemco, and I will debate the pros and cons of being a stay-at-home dad. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us. Growth among those who don't.